Hi, you're listening to Boggy Talk, Faith Conversations in the Mud, a resource of Church on Bayshore.
Well, hey, thanks for joining us today on Boggy Talk. We've got a lot coming up this week. Fall festivals going to be tomorrow.
Yes, yeah. Fall festival. Always so much fun.
It is fun.
It is fun. There's always so many people.
And as an extrovert, it's really enjoyable.
Yeah, it really is. And if you're an introvert, it's maybe the most exhausting night of your life. I don't know.
Yeah, but you can kind of like hide in the crowd.
You can bob
and
weave.
So
yeah,
I think it's a good
bob and weave.
Just dress up, you know, get one of the masks.
Wear a costume and no one will talk to you.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Did you guys, when you were kids, did your churches celebrate or do... What did
well,
they do?
I didn't go to church.
That's true. So okay.
You heathen.
We did like Halloween. We were the Halloween family and went trick or treating. Yeah. You know. And
did you guys have candy at your house or did you just go?
So we lived kind of once we moved out of Jacksonville. We lived kind of in a rural place, so no one came to our house. Like it was like on 5 acres. Like nobody.
Okay.
Came to our. I mean, I think my mom like always hoped and put a small bowl of candy out there, but. Nobody did. So we would like drive to town, you know, to trick or treat.
Yeah, we double dipped. I remember like when I was little, our church did like a fall festival, and then we also went trick or treating. We were never like super big.
Like on the same night, or was it two different?
Details are fuzzy from
when
childhood.
You were
I don't
at
remember.
The fall festival, were you like, yeah, there's those heathens that celebrate Halloween? And then,
well,
like,
I do remember one fall festival.
I don't know why you sound like a 6-year-old smoker as 8-year-old Justin.
My voice was definitely like this. I definitely had a Mickey Mouse voice. I do remember like the fall festival was like dress up as your favorite Bible character, but I'm like,
oh, do churches still do that?
They're all they all look the same. Like everybody just shows up like as
That's
a
true.
Shepherd.
That's
basically.
True. That's a good point.
Is that the only thing you were allowed to dress up as was a Bible character?
I think for that, yeah.
But what about the one dude who dressed up as Joseph? You were like, oh yeah.
You can dress up as a Bible character, but it can't be the devil, right? You can't do that. But then we were like as a family never, to my recollection, like we weren't the family who. Like spend a ton of time thinking of costumes. It was kind of like, what do you have in your closet? And that tradition.
I don't see Anne as a big decorator.
No, she does now. I mean, I truly
Halloween?
Don't. Yeah, like
really?
I mean, fall. She does fall decorations.
Okay.
Yeah, like she does like the you know that kind of stuff.
Okay.
She listens to Boggy Talk. Hey,
she does. She's gonna poopah.
That's right.
Weekly.
But we've carried that on with our kids. We're like, well, whatever we got, y'all just go make a costume and figure it out because we don't want to spend money on that.
Yeah. What about you, Kelly? Yeah. You were...
We did... our church did a fall festival.
Okay.
And it was actually a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. They had it at a school that was close by.
Ooh. Okay.
Because it was, you know, that big of a deal.
Bridging that great divide. You can't do the fall festival at church.
No.
Is it because of the number of people or was it like a doctrinal...
It was the amount of people.
Okay.
And they had like a lot of activities. So
okay,
they did
gotcha.
In the gym and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
So yeah, but we could dress up as whatever we wanted.
Really?
You know, I'm sure in reason. No scary costumes is probably a subline.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun growing up, but we didn't really go around the street or anything like that. Mm. So,
Well, our fall festival is great. I mean, we have so many people who come on campus. I think last year was right around 1,000 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And our kids ministry, Lucas and the team, do a great job organizing it. So,
way
to go.
I think it's like thousands.
Maybe.
I think it's like 5,000.
On our campus?
Yeah.
5,000 people?
Yeah.
What?
I think
so.
I don't think so.
There's
I think
no
you're
way
doing
it's only
I think
1,000.
That's a pastor math.
Well, that would be there's no way it's only 1,000.
I think it's about 1,000.
Really?
I think last year it was over 1,000, but 5,000.
We have 1,000 on a Sunday.
5,000
so
people would
here.
Like fill up more than fill up Niceville's stadium.
But they like come and go.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. We have a great
it's
way to
somewhere
count.
Somewhere in between.
We'll fact check.
That's
you.
Right.
We'll
we're
going to
count.
Boggy listeners.
I'm like five.
You know.
Wow.
Let's see if I can get Lucas's response
you, like,
by the end of this.
Speaking
episode.
It
yes.
into the universe that we're going to have 5,000.
<right. laughs> just I'm just declaring over Fall Festival
it.
Right now. Declaring over Fall Festival. There will be a multitude.
5,000.
We will have to part the sea of the crowd.
All right, we'll see. Hold on.
He really wants to know. Right
yeah,
now.
I do. I just there's no way it's only 1,000, but we'll see.
Well, that would okay. So if there were 5,000, and let's just say a quarter of those were kids, that's 1,250.
You're starting to make a lot of sense.
1,400. Okay, there we go.
That was quick.
Hey, that was very quick.
Okay. Yeah,
okay,
but
so
you.
We both stand corrected.
I went over, so you won.
All right.
Now we know. All right.
I don't know why I thought
this is the Price is Right.
When you started saying the parking thing, I'm like, yeah, 5,000.
I'm like doing the math on the candy. It's like we have 40,000 pieces of candy, so that'd be 8 pieces of candy per kid. My kids,
including adults.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But even then, yeah. Yeah. That's a lot.
It's a lot of people.
Okay, that is a lot of people.
It felt like a lot of people, yeah. too.
So, yeah, that's yeah. just the number, like, registered, right? So it's probably 1,600 to 1,800
yeah,
on campus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
it's like Easter.
It's a lot. You just, yeah, yeah. yeah, they just keep coming.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, there is still time to volunteer, and there's also still time to bring candy, because I know we still need candy.
Yeah, we need 5,000 people.
Bring, yes, that's right. Bring yeah. the candy. Yes, we need the fishes and loaves scenario with candy.
Yeah, so you could definitely visit our website and find that. But continuing with our Boggy Talk series.
Are you cracking up?
Then I said 5,000 people. That was Pastor
Matt. That's really funny.
I don't know why I thought 5,000. Okay,
it's
all right.
Okay.
Well,
moving
on.
At our previous church, we always had this saying, like, and I don't doubt that he listens to this, but the previous pastor, his
I
name
know
was
who
Mark.
You're gonna say,
we
Mark
used
Siegel.
To say, and I love that guy so much, uh-huh. but we would always be like, we'd be like, well, this year, last year, there were this many people, and we were like, is that the real number or is that Mark Math? Because he's like the.
I'm not that guy, by the
he
way.
He is the epitome. What he is the epitome of, like, the positive,
yeah,
like,
he is.
Just like
yeah.
love.
Optimistic,
I mean,
yeah.
and God uses that in his ministry, yeah. and I love him for it.
Yeah. yeah. Well, we love your enthusiasm for 5,000 people. So that's awesome.
That's right.
One day.
One day, yeah.
Actually,
well,
probably not.
We are continuing in Judges, which is, we've talked about this. It's a weird book. And so our podcast series, this is the last of the
yes.
weird,
strange
and
weird.
Weird things. Mm. And so if anything gets weird quickly, it's talking about money. So that's what we're
yeah.
going to talk about today
mm-hmm.
is money. First, start it off. We'll just go in and start talking about tithing.
Thought you were going to say to start it off. The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
Money.
That's what I want. Yeah, tithing.
Yeah. So.
Should we?
Should we? Like what? I mean, there's so much to unpack there.
Yeah.
Controversy, you know.
So where does tithing originate?
Well, it. Do you want to start?
No.
Kelly's like, no, y'all.
It
stop.
Originates
in the Old
the Bible.
Testament.
Bible.
The Bible. There
yes.
you go. That's right. It's not a man-made thing.
It means
yes.
a tenth, right?
Yeah.
The
it means a tenth.
Means
and,
tenth.
You know, it predates the law. I think people, a lot of times,
uh-huh.
that is an
good,
appeal.
Good,
like,
good,
there you go.
Yep,
it predates
yep.
the law when you talk about Abraham. Abram and Melchizedek, you know, it says that he offered a tithe of sacrifice to Melchizedek. And so I think the debate is, well, the New Testament doesn't say tithe. Mm-hmm. And I would say to that, actually, the New Testament, just like with everything else of the law, actually ups the stakes
yeah.
for Christians. You know, like Jesus says, you know, when you've heard it said, don't do this. Well, I say if your eye causes you to, you know, gouge it out. So like Jesus is always like mm-hmm. telling us, and that's mm-hmm. what the New Testament does. So mm-hmm. the New Testament model is to mm-hmm. sacrificially give.
Right.
So I think that's really the standard.
Yeah.
I would there's ways I would approach this with people. I would tell to a mature Christian, I mean, tithing is the basement. To someone who is new in their faith or, you know, maybe realizing that for the first time, mm-hmm. I would say, hey, that's the goal. But let's take steps to get you there, because
mm-hmm.
you probably,
mm-hmm.
we all have the capacity to make mm-hmm. financial choices mm-hmm. that would potentially make tithing not possible in the immediate, but
yeah.
also like there's a level, there is faith involved in it as well
mm-hmm.
too. It is worship. It is an act of worship. And we can speak more to the church responsibility of that,
yeah.
you know, in the midst of budget season. But
yeah, I mean, yeah, Genesis chapter 17, right? 14 or 17?
I'll check. Okay, it's somewhere in the teens.
He did that for the first time, and then the law later said that. It
mm-hmm.
actually prescribed 10% for tithes and 10% for festivals, and then 10% every 7 years, so 3.3% for basically like another tax, think temple tax. So they were given like 23.3%, but the first tenth
mm-hmm.
part was like really worship. There were concessions for that, you know, for poor people, for people who live far away. So there was even God's grace in that. But, yeah, in the New Testament, you definitely see descriptions of giving weekly to God through the local church in order to, you know, for the church to function and for the mission to advance and poor to be cared for. Mm-hmm. And so that should be something we're doing today. And yeah, I really struggle with this when it comes to people in most contexts who are like, I can't do that, because I'm just like, I know you and I know what you spend money on.
Yeah.
And I understand, like, you might not be able to go eat as nice food for some people. You might not be able to, it may cause you to question kids' activities. It may cause you to question vacations, but like, we're talking about worship. So like, it was just something, once the Lord got a hold of me, I was like, yeah, of course I want God in control of this area. And there are certain people who are like that. And I would just affirm Justin. I think that for most people in our context in the West, it is the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And so how can we give beyond that?
Yeah. I was going to say, so for somebody that like didn't grow up in a Christian environment where that was like normal, you know, your parents did that, you probably did that with your allowance or your whatever. And so you were just like, that and the money was never yours. Like, how is that not growing up in that? And then when you kind of like come to that realization, like, oh, I need to be giving to the Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, I think
as a young believer.
Yeah. I think for me, it was like, okay, like I want him in control.
Mm-hmm.
I think money is, you know, whenever you take like values test, economics is like something that I am high on. So I guess I place a high value on money. And so for me, that's like something that is very important to me to say, Lord, I want, you know, I want you to use this and direct this and guide this. It's not just about what I see, you know, him doing with it. It's cool come tax time, because I'm like, well, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and when I think about certain people, you know, who I'm like, how do they do all the things they do? I'm like, oh, because there's a good chance they're not doing this. You know what I mean? Like, and not like comparing, but I'm like, oh, that's why we can't do that. But also like, wow, the Lord, I did that, you know, like that's grace. But so I would just say, like, ultimately, like, I want him in control of my finances.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to submit to the lordship of Jesus in all things. And I think, you know, for me, it doesn't mean that it's always, you know, I want my heart to be a cheerful, glad giver, like the scriptures. And there are times, especially you're looking and you're like, well, I could do this if I didn't. But I'm like, but I really, when I think it through, I'm like, no way. Like, because the Lord does honor it and bless it, you know, like he does provide everything. And I think, going back to what you said, it's like, if someone's new to this, you know, there's different approaches, and you could systematize it, like making goals. I mean, I think it's wise to evaluate, like you said. I mean, we've done the same thing too at tax time. You're like, hey, we want to do a little bit more next year. We want to be in a position where we can do more, give more. But helping people get there sometimes is a challenge. And so you can either be like, just do it, make it. And if you're not there, I would just say, let's take steps. But this is the goal, and you got to constantly evaluate. Like, and it does mean, you know, saying no to things. I mean, it really does. I mean, and I think, but that's like, where's our treasure?
Right.
And I don't say that like, oh, it's always just a glad, you know, there's times I'm like, there are times when it's a struggle. Let's just be honest. But I don't want it to be a struggle, and I don't want to be discontent in it. Well, but you just honor the Lord.
What about you? I mean, you weren't on church staff until like a year ago. So like, we've been pastors. So it's like, we technically probably would get fired if we, so, I mean, seriously, you know, I that's not why I do it. I don't even, that's not an issue for me, but like,
I think, I mean, I grew up in a household, and they always tithed and taught us that. And so I think it was just like, this is just what you do, you know? I remembered when Chris and I first got married, we were poor as dirt, you know, both of us teachers, and we actually got audited, and they audited us on our giving.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And so we had to go to the church we were going to and get all of these like notarized things that this really was how much we gave to the church, because they didn't believe it.
Wow. Wow.
So because it is, I mean, that's not
what a
like
witness, though,
part of the world, like, you know, to be like, here are these poor teachers giving away their money. But,
And I'm not naive. I mean, I don't know like who gives in our church, but I get numbers, and like, as we've grown, the number of people who give is not really going up much.
Yeah.
Now the ones who are giving more. It's definitely not going up, you know,
like the same.
At the rate. So this is clearly an issue for a lot of people. Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would really ask a believer to really talk to God about this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want you to do it because the pastor guilts you into doing it.
No.
But, yeah. like, why do you not trust the Lord with this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I do think, you know, there are some people in some circumstances that, like, it does make sense that it takes some time. I personally think, you know, there are people who are very poor who they are struggling to even pay their bills. And I think based on what I see happen in the Old Testament, God sees the heart, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I don't get frustrated with that. I get frustrated the number of people who, like, I mean, anyway, that's between them and the Lord.
We had something. I mean, we had a family when we were doing all of our adoption fundraisers, and we had like a grant that was a matching grant, mm-hmm. and we had sent out letters and stuff, and we had a family come to us, let's knock on our door, and it was this sweet family that we just, you would never meet them and think these people, and they lived so simply, but they handed us cash, and she mm-hmm. said, I'm giving you cash, don't give my name, like we, and it was the same thing. It's mm-hmm. like we live simply, and we got audited by the IRS because they didn't believe we were giving, and so we just stopped. We just stopped turning it in because we didn't want everyone to deal with that again. I was mm-hmm. like, and these people live so you would never.
Yeah.
They just live so simply, but they just because it was their joy to give and trust the Lord in that.
I think we should probably mention like some people. This is more millennials, like are more about like, well, my tithe is to this missions organization or my tithe is to whatever. And I think I get it if you've been a part of churches where you feel like things are being wasted.
Mm-hmm.
But like the call is to God through the local church, and then you have the opportunity to really weigh in. I think we're talking about budget next week,
mm-hmm.
right?
In
our church, like you have the opportunity really, you should have the opportunity to really weigh in.
Right.
We just had a person join our church from another church in the area because they're like, I couldn't get any financial information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's like,
it's
that's
odd.
Wrong.
Yeah,
I don't know
very
what to say.
Odd.
Like,
red flags for sure.
I mean, obviously, you don't like. I mean, you have to come and sit down with our administrator to find out like salaries,
right,
like just because we have a big enough staff, we're not going to just be publishing that. Mm-hmm. But like, you're a giver, like you have the right to that information. So like, but I would also say like, if the Lord is compelling you to support missions, like why can't you give to God through your local church and then on top of that give to missions? Like, if God has blessed you in such a way. So,
Well, moving on. The next is we've kind of heard comes from not this denomination, but certain denominations when they're very much like you're giving because you're going to be blessed through it. Like that's the reasoning. That every time you give, there was that scripture reference. I think people take it out of context all the
sow
time.
Sow those seeds, Kelly.
Give and it'll be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together. I mean, that whole, you know, kind
Chris Brown on this one right here. He grew up charismatic.
Just
Christy Ross and Chris Brown.
They understand that kind of stuff. Just kind of the difference between understanding like God's provision for you versus your prosperity.
I think the root of it is twisting something that's true. Does God bless giving? Absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What is the blessing in giving? We'll know in heaven.
Yeah.
Jesus is the blessing. Like, you know, in 2 Corinthians, like when Paul tells you, like, God desires a cheerful giver, then he goes on to say, and God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having at all times having all things. But he's talking about Jesus, like you can give because you got Jesus. And then, you know, we just finished up studying Hebrews in our life group in chapter 13. He's like, be content with what you have, because if you're not, and this is he's writing to a persecuted church who were facing like economic hardship because of following Jesus. He's like, because if you love money more than Jesus, you're going to abandon Jesus. Mm-hmm. Like you're going to abandon persevering to the end because it's hard.
Yeah.
Is that where he also says, I'll never leave you?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, he's with us in it. And I think, like, does God bless it? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Is defined blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And if does he sometimes bless with more?
I mean,
there's people that God keeps giving them abundance because and I wouldn't say it's solely because, but they're generous and they and they're seeking ways to be more generous, and God uses those people, so he does. He bless.
I think there are principles in the Bible that the Lord definitely at times gives more resources to those who are faithful with them. But then there are also times in the Bible where the Lord takes away, you know, and then, you know, Job says, I'll still praise his name. He gives and takes away, you know. And so I think that we should be the people who say, well, I want to be the kind of person that God trusts with more resources for his – I want to be a vessel for that. But also with the recognition that I trust him. And so if he has a reason not to give me more, it's because he loves me. And I want to give because I love him, not because of that. And I mean, you could say that with anything as a pastor. Like, you know, I mean, actually, I don't know about this anymore. But, like, most pastors are like, the more people I have, the more, you know, like, we can do for the kingdom. And it's like, so I want to be the kind of guy that God trusts with, but people, but also, like, I'm fine with whatever he wants, you know. I think it's like that. But there's definitely a lot of wacky teaching out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they know people love money. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, here's a motivation to give, right?
It's so twisted.
You're on the hook. Yeah.
1 Timothy 6 really warns about teachers who are desiring to become teachers for gain.
For gain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it says godliness with contentment is great gain.
Yeah.
Well, that leads into the next one. Just success. People wanting that success financially or even maybe just their name, you know, being known. See a lot of that.
Yeah, I'm just glad we live in a town where people don't
in a culture where that's that. Yeah. I mean, it's like I was talking about this with Jacob actually recently, just in terms of like we do live and it is Niceville, but it's also our area and it's also our country and it's also the world. Like, everybody wants success, and and so it's not just it's in all of us, and like
work hard for the money.
That's right. And it's like pursuing excellence, but why? So like what is your motivation in this? Like, is it to glorify God? Is your motivation for success so that you can steward it for his glory, for his renown, for resources? Like, it comes back to motivation. And motivation. Motives matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, motives matter. I think that, you know, we should want – I mean, hard work. God created Adam to work, before the fall.
Gave him a job before the fall.
Before the fall. Mm-hmm. So that is a part of – that's a part of our DNA. And then, you know, men as a provider – I'm talking to men. I'll let Kelly talk to women more. You know, so like men should feel the responsibility to work and provide. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that means your wife can't work, but it should be your a guy's responsibility. I even say, like, all guys, if they can figure out a way that if their wife wants to stay home, that they can make it happen, then they do it. Like, if that means two jobs. Like, so that should be a part of who we are. But we can become very worldly in that, where, like, we're not content and we're always driven. And if things are out of balance at home, we can begin to find more and more of our identity in that.
Right.
And the world will applaud you for earthly success.
Good point. Yep.
You know, your world may be just a circle, it may be whatever. And so I think what Justin said, motivation has to be it has to be checked. Mm-hmm. Whatever you do for the glory of God, as we said. So, like, not your own glory, you know?
Yeah.
So
what did you guys feel like? I mean, this kind of goes along with that. But that whole success thing, and if we're giving God the glory enough, or us, like, Force Frank, Dove Awards, that whole controversy with – did you know?
Well, I got thoughts.
I'm going there. Yeah, I just think –
wasn't I going off about this yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's the controversy about him and the Dove Awards and not attending, but yeah, and then people be like, well, you didn't have a problem picking the money for the song.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I heard somebody say yesterday, they're like, someone just needs to take his phone away and stop posting on social media.
I
agree. I'm like, because I feel like he's posturing himself for more followers, you know, and but that's part of your job, which is sad that it is that. I mean, let's deconstruct it all right now. But I just think like, I have more thoughts on that, but probably don't need to.
It becomes alluring. Yeah. Meta like told me, you know, because it made me go to like professional mode. and then it told me, like, hey, if you monetize, you would have made $5.60 last
month.
Right, yeah. First of all, $5.60.
That's not even Starbucks coffee.
I know,
just sell a Diet Coke or something.
But for others, I think it's like that number is much higher. And so you begin to, like, monetize everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem the fact that he's making music and making lots of money. And he even posted something saying, you know, what I do with that money, since I have the legal ownership of that, is between me and the Lord, and he doesn't want to talk about it. And so maybe he genuinely is very generous.
Yeah, right.
So
that
part isn't necessarily the problem. It's the kind of inconsistency when you're like, well, I don't receive any awards for this. It's like, well, are you kind of robbing then your fans who, you know, like – you know, it's kind of like a pastor who'd be like, don't do a pastor appreciation month. Like, for me, it's like, I don't necessarily want the recognition, but also, like, people feel called to honor those who they're. So, like, with Forrest Frank, like, his music has been a huge
there's
blessing.
There's nothing wrong with an award show. Yeah, exactly.
I think he's just confused and young. Honestly, you know.
Very true.
But I think it hits on a great point that, like, today, the line is just so blurry because of our culture.
Yeah.
Like, I was saying, there's a generation in our church that you could work hard and not necessarily make money. Then boomers, they worked hard and they made money, right? And the millennials didn't want to work hard and still wanted money. Like, there's been this progression of, like, hard work should always equal money. And it's like, that's not how most of the world has lived for history.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that because of our affluence in America and just our really idol of success and all of that, materialism can really be the next weird thing that comes along. And that can just be so convoluted, I think, too, because it's like we live in this culture.
Material world.
I was about to say, we live in a material world.
Everything has a song.
Especially with money, right?
That would have been great. Sorry. I just leave it to y'all to do that. But
Well, you skipped over women and success, so I'll let you just talk about materialism then.
Oh, I didn't even see that. Was that on there?
It wasn't on there.
I said, I'll talk about the guy's perspective. Women and hard work and all that. Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody's very different in that. And I mean, I agree. I think that the husband should be, you know, the primary breadwinner, you use that terminology. But I do think that if a woman wants to work, then that's totally fine. I think for me personally,
I'm glad you aren't working here against your convictions.
Yes, that would be awkward. Right. Yeah, I just think for me, like, I would be bored at home. Like, my brain needs, you know, to be working towards something. It just, that's just how I think God created me.
Yeah.
And it's been awesome to be in a place where I think he can use my gifts for his glory. And that's, you know, I don't know if he'll always want me working or whatever. Mm. But, you know, you just take, like, when my kids were little, I wanted to be home with them, you know? And so Chris at that point was just teaching. And so he started teaching at the college. He started tutoring. He started doing a lot of extra things. So I could stay home.
What a guy. That's
he
awesome.
He is, yeah. And then when it got to a point where he was in a position later that it was like, okay, I can go back to work if I want to. It was always my decision. And he has always said from the beginning, like, if you don't want to work anymore, that's totally up to you. So I'm very appreciative.
I would ask with that, like, I love that. I think your wife stayed home, right?
Until recently.
Yeah, until your kids were older. And Chris, we keep having younger kids. So, I'm was saying every guy should allow his wife to do that if she desires to, you know, not like he should make her stay home, you know, necessarily.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, I think what kind of convolutes all that, is materialism can cause you not even ask those questions you should ask. And so
because you have to do it so that you can have everything that people
you think
around have.
There's this standard in the world that this is what – I remembered somebody – it was a pastor of a different church. He said when his daughter first got married, he realized that she thought that they were supposed to have everything that him and his wife had at that stage of life. And they were like, no, you know, we've worked this whole time to do these things. And so it's like, I think that certain generations have that. They just think, well, when I'm here, I am expected to have this and this and this and this. And a lot of it is very materialistic. And social media has made that so much worse. You know, even just, I mean, everything. Parties, like.
Everything has to be the most and the best.
And I think especially for females, too, when they're just, you know, looking at all of that, too. Like, home things. What does your home need to look like? You know, what do your clothes need to look like? All, I mean, the standard that puts out there. It is very materialistic, and so therefore you have to have more money. And so, well, you know, it, your priorities just get very confused easily. So, yeah.
That's good.
So the next one, we kind of talked about this a little bit in the blessings for giving, but really it comes out of, like, word of faith movements, and it was the prosperity gospel. So just that whole, like, name it and claim it brand.
Yeah, it's very damaging to people.
And maybe we should explain what the prosperity
gospel really is. It is by definition damaging to people. But it is definitely the name it, claim it. Like, if you do this, God will do this. You know, if you give this, God will return it to you.
Tenfold,
yeah, is usually or
whatever. 5,000-fold.
I mean, I'll take that one. No, I'm just kidding. But I think that that is essentially what it is. That God, basically, God now, because you have done this, God is now on the hook for this. And he has to. And it's a twisting of what we talked about earlier with the blessings.
In Mark 14, I think, Jesus says to Peter, because Peter's like, well, we left everything for you, what we'll receive. And he tells them, you will receive 100-fold for, there's no one who's left, you know, husband or whatever, you know, wife, land, receive 100-fold. Well, but in no way does it say like 100 times that. His point is that, like, what you're going to receive is, and he's not using the exact number, he's using hyperbole, is so much infinitely better than what you're giving up. What you receive in me is so much better. And so, and he also says with persecutions and that. So, like, I don't often hear that preached in that context. You know? Like, so, like, I think it's just a recognition that Jesus is that much better. Like, the life with Jesus is that much better. And yeah, I would think the prosperity gospel, the danger of that is not just like, it's not just the tension of like, okay, well, I believe God will keep trusting me with more as I'm faithful with more. Like, it's the idea that, like, God owes me more. And this is the reason I'm doing these things. And it very may well indeed be a damning belief.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you don't actually believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ. You believe in the prosperity gospel.
This came up in conversation with someone recently where they were like, I have done these things and I just expected God would do this by now. It's like, well, you have basically created a works-based faith by saying that.
He's a genie, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so sad to me, too, because then I think, like, even people that, you know, come, they're probably new believers, or if they are and they're in that movement, how sad it must be for them that even in their, like, just immaturity, naivety, whatever, that they're thinking, like, well, this person, this pastor, whatever, I'm trusting them. They're saying that if I say these things or I claim this, that God's, you know, and they might even be pure in heart thinking that, and then how fracturing it is to their you know, walk with the Lord whenever it doesn't happen. And so they're, you know, and I'm just like, that is just so, it's so skewed.
Well, essentially what prosperity gospel does is it exchanges the hope of heaven and tries to translate to that to the earth. And while we do have, like, the Holy Spirit abiding in us, we have the presence of the Lord with us, like, there are things that, there are rewards in heaven. There's a hope that is to come that we're just trying to get now by works. I mean, essentially, that's the prosperity gospel.
Paul Washer, who I'm really not a huge fan of Paul Washer's delivery in general, he said one time in a sermon, it was just really good, he was talking about Joel Osteen and all their criticisms of Joel Osteen, and he was like, it's more troubling that millions of people would want to believe what Joel Osteen says than that Joel Osteen exists. And, like, that's the truth, I think, that you said, like, some people are just brought into it and they're used and they see the light. But some people never see the light because they want that to be true so bad. Mm-hmm. And that's where I say, like, you know, it's about God and His Word. And there's a lot of tension in the faith, you know, of God makes it rain on the righteous, the just and the unjust. Like, mm-hmm. there's not a formula.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. there's a life that He's called us to live individually that we're to be content.
And if anything, the Bible preaches the opposite.
Yeah,
I mean, like the Sermon on the Mount, the whole just upside down kingdom. And I'm like, I guess they just didn't read that part.
Yeah.
So, all right. Should pastors get paid?
That's, yes. Thank you.
I mean, we see this even in Scripture.
Yep.
So Paul advocates for that.
Yeah, they do in the Bible. I mean, you know, I think a pastor should be willing to fulfill their calling without money. Mm-hmm. So let me clarify. I feel called, and, you know, others affirm that, to teach the Bible and shepherd. So I think that even if we were in a world where the government said pastors couldn't be paid, I would exercise that calling in some way. It would not be in the context of a church this size with the responsibilities I have, because I wouldn't have the time, because I'd have to figure out another way to make money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I do think, like, the heart of the pastor should be not to get rich, not to just to provide for his, so I would say, like, to do what God's calling him to do, but He's also calling him to provide for his family. So, like, pastors who are, like, absolutely starving their family out for the call, like, I actually think are being unfaithful.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, and there was a period in the time where churches, like, some churches, Baptist specifically, felt like it was, like, a badge of honor to, like, starve their pastor. So I'd say that. Then I would just say, like, the more the not necessarily the bigger the church, but the more responsibilities placed on the pastors from the church, the more they probably should be compensated for their time. Now, you know, when you get into the mega church model and all that, it's like,
yeah, that's people that, are that, like, how much should they?
Yeah. And that's
it's tricky.
That's more of a question of, like, you know, you have elders and you recognize, like, you know, there are demands on those guys, you know, like, so I don't know. That's where it gets a little icky, and I'm just not really that good. At the end of the day, yes, Paul talks about it.
Yeah.
The script, Paul encourages it, and certainly it has been the model for a long time.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. And I would say specifically here, I mean, there's a system.
There's quite a system.
We have a personnel team that, you know, works and analyzes data. They use several surveys and websites to determine what is fair, you know, based off of responsibility level, titles, and, you know, even where, you know, where we live. It factors all those things in. And they're trying to, you know, they're basing it off of the area, you know, so they're trying to keep things.
Yeah, and it's been challenging for churches because of the economy, the cost of living, you know, housing. in our context, housing, like, for people to live in Niceville is just really challenging,
Well, to close this out real quickly, we had a question. Should Christians celebrate Halloween?
Well, apparently, based on the introduction.
I think a better question would be, like, should you? I don't know. Can you? Yeah. You know, like, yeah, I think. You know, there's liberty there.
Yeah, I think it is an issue of Christian liberty. Mm-hmm. And I think we've talked before. Mm-hmm. You could look back. Like, for us, we don't do, like, any spooky, scary stuff.
We're not glorifying here.
Yeah, but, man, it is some of my neighbors, it's like the only time I actually, like, have meaningful conversation with them in the year. Because, like, we all sit outside and walk together, and, like, it's just a great opportunity. I mean, in fact, remember Antoine Gallagher?
Yep.
That's how he ended up at Bayshore.
Sweet.
Cool.
So there's, like, a real I mean, he got saved and baptized, you know? Like, I'm not saying just the connection made him come to Bayshore.
Yeah. Like, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, my husband and I met at a youth group Halloween night.
Oh,
so, you know,
were you dressed up as Kelly Kapowski?
No, not Kelly Kapowski. It was like a 70s night, so we were all dressed up in disco.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, so, you know,
He saw those bell bottom jeans.
It wasn't AD 70s, like Bible times. Okay.
No Bible character. Okay. It was Assemblies of God Church, so they're a little
dressed,
you know,
like John on the island of Patmos.
Yeah. But anyways. Well, if you have any questions, you can email me at kelly@churchonbayshore.org. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to Boggy Talk. We are so glad you joined in the conversation. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss a beat.